This Augusta Golf Show podcast is brought to you by Gerald Jones Audi. Inspire design, where emotion takes shape. 4022 Washington Road in Martinez.
Here at Audi, we have some good news to share with the world. Unfortunately, our good news is bad news for our competition. So to soften the blow, we brought in the very best at delivering bad news. Someone's mom.
The Audi A4 is the biggest, fastest, most fuel-efficient car in its class. Oh, honey, I know it's hard to hear, but it'll be okay.
I'm David Jones, inviting you to test drive an impressive new Audi A4 Premium today at Gerald Jones Audi, 4022 Washington Road in Martinez, or visit us on the web at GeraldJonesAudi.com. Audi. Truth in engineering.
Well, John Feinstein is the award-winning author of A Season on the Brink, A Good Walk Spoiled, and 22 additional books. He's a columnist for The Washington Post, a Golf Channel contributor. It's a pleasure to have John Feinstein back on the Augusta Golf Show. Hi, John.
Hey, John. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for doing this. I know times are tough up there in our nation's capital with the weather and things.
It's just been a relentless winter. I'm fantasizing about getting to Augusta because I'm going to think and hope we won't have any 10-inch snowstorms that week.
Well, you know what? I'll go on record now. I will guarantee you we will not have a 10-inch snowstorm that week.
All right. I'll come looking for you if there is one.
I'm curious, talking about your books, are you working on a book right now?
Yes. I'm getting near the finish line on a book I've been working on for a little more than a year on Jim Valvano, Mike Krzyzewski, and Dean Smith. And the book's about their relationships and their rivalries and how they changed over the years. And, of course, Dean's death a little less than a month ago, kind of will wrap up the book. That'll be my ending point of the book.
I thought that was really wonderful, the tributes that came his way on his passing.
Well, they were much deserved. He was an extraordinary man, and I don't say that lightly. There are very few people who I have encountered in all the years I've covered sports who have had the influence and effect on me personally that Dean Smith did. It's a cliche, but he was far, far more than a basketball coach.
When do you hope that book is out?
I hope it'll be out right about this time next year, going into the start of March Madness in 2016.
Okay. When you were on the show last fall, we were talking about the Ryder Cup, the task force. We got a captain now. We've got qualifications in place. What do you think about what's taken place since Glenn Eagles?
Well, I was surprised, like I think everybody, but pleased with the choice of Davis Love, and that's no knock on either Fred Couples or Paul Azinger as a captain. But I think all of us get better at something the second time, especially if we weren't perfect the first time. And I think Davis is very aware of the fact that he wasn't perfect the first time. I was at that sort of press conference / pep rally when he was introduced as the captain, and Phil Mickelson was there, and Ricky Fowler was there, and they talked about the new qualifications. But the thing that struck me most that day, other than all the, you know, cheering and yay, we're going to do it, was the first thing Davis said, which was, I will be a different captain this time. And I asked him after the press conference, I said, I'm guessing that what you were saying is that you've learned from the experience. He said, absolutely. I know I made mistakes. I'm going to do some things differently. There are some things I thought I did well that I'll do again this time, but I will be different in my approach to being the captain this time. I think that the changes they made in terms of points and captain's picks are all good, but I was, Damon Hack, my friend and colleague on Golf Channel, asked me the next morning, you know, do you think the U.S. has now closed the gap? And my answer was, yeah, we're leading 2-0 at Hazeltine. Let's not get carried away. I think that Davis is a good choice. It's still going to come down to who makes more putts under pressure. That's what it always comes down to.
Hey, did you see the comments from Ted Bishop earlier this week that in his mind, this is now Phil Mickelson's team. This is the process that Phil began at Glen Eagles, and it's now Phil's Ryder Cup team.
Yeah, I did see those comments, and I think there's some validity to them. I think that I did not like the way he handled that. I thought it was the wrong time to take the shots that he did at Watson, and they weren't very subtle. I mean, I if you go back and watch that tape, the look on Hunter Mahan's face sitting next to Phil kind of tells you everything. But, you know, he answered more questions at that press conference than Davis did. It was as much his deal as it was Davis's. Very interesting that Tiger Woods, who lives right down the road, was not there, even though he was a part of the task force, just as Phil and Ricky Fowler were. That would have been fascinating to see Phil and Tiger sharing that little stage together. But I think clearly Phil's going to have a voice going forward. He's going to be a Ryder Cup captain down the road. I think most of us think it'll be at Bethpage in 2024. Clearly his voice was very much a factor in that room.
You brought up Tiger. Haven't had the chance to talk to you about Tiger and what he's been going through the last 3 months. What do you make of all that?
I'm not sure. My honest answer. Everybody's got a theory, obviously, including Tiger, you know, who I'm between patterns on my chipping and my glutes didn't fire. And I mean, he's speaking a language with which I'm not familiar, to paraphrase Bobby Jones. I think, and I don't want this to come out wrong, I think he's having a golfing version of a nervous breakdown. He doesn't know what the heck to do next. You know, there's a part of him that's saying, you know what, I need to just go away, take 6 months off, not look at a golf club, just travel with my girlfriend or spend time with my kid. And then there's another part of him that says, I got to get out there. I got to play. I'm almost 40. Time is running out. And what I think he's got to do is either go one way or the other. He can't sit there in the middle and say, well, I'll play once a month. I'll play here. I'll play there. If he really wants to play and wants to get back to being anything approaching Tiger Woods, he should play not just Bay Hill. He should play Bay Hill, play in Texas, play the Masters, play Hilton Head. Just keep playing. You know, he always talks about needing more reps. Well, you can't get more reps, John, if you're sitting in your house.
We're talking with John Feinstein here on the Augusta Golf Show. So having said what you've said, would you be at all surprised if he came into Augusta and contended?
I would not be. I have this theory on elite athletes, John, that you never say never. You know, remember Jack Nicklaus in 86. I think that's probably the best golf example. But I mean, Tom Watson almost won the British Open when he was 59. All sorts of, you know, Pete Sampras figured out a way to win one last U.S. Open. And Ted Williams hit a home run in his last at bat when he was 41. I mean, there are all sorts of examples of guys who are truly great. I don't mean guys who are good or very good. I mean the true greats. Tiger Woods is either the best or the second best golfer in history, depending on how you want to add up the numbers. But he's no worse than second. And so I never say never with an athlete at that level. Having said that, there's no evidence right now that he's going to contend at Augusta.
Before I let you go, another story from earlier this week about Royal St. George's. The RNA obviously had that vote late last year, adding female members. Royal St. George's voting to add members to the club. Mm-hmm. You told a story on Golf Channel earlier this week about Ben Curtis. If you don't mind, tell that story.
Well, it's really Ben's story, but he told me when I was researching Moment of Glory, which was the book I did about the four major winners in 2003, out of nowhere. Mike Weir didn't come out of nowhere, but he hadn't been close in a major, and Ben Curtis and Sean McKeel certainly did. And Ben was telling me that a few months after he won the Open Championship as the 396th ranked player in the world, he was in London with his wife, who is a newlywed, and his parents playing in the World Match Play Championships, decided to take a drive down to St. George's to see the place where he'd had his great moment. His parents had not been on that trip. And they walked up to the clubhouse, and they were told, Mr. Curtis, you can come in. Mr. Curtis, you can come in. But Mrs. Curtis, you can't come in because women are not allowed in our clubhouse. And Ben said, I just won the Open Championship here a couple months ago. I want to show my wife and my mom the display that they put up for the champion and show them around the clubhouse a little bit. Nope, can't do it. So Ben went to the secretary of the club, which, you know, that's the British version of a general manager, and explained the situation. And then the secretary finally said to him, all right, I'm going to make an exception because you're the Open champion, but don't stay long. So I guess we can say they made progress in 12 years.
There you go. By the way, before I let you go, what do you have a title for the new book?
Yes, The Triangle, because, you know, Duke, North Carolina, NC State are located in the Research Triangle, and the book's about three great coaches working in that area.
He is John Feinstein, best-selling author, columnist, and contributor to Golf Channel. We'll see you in a few weeks, John. Thanks for taking the time to do this.
John, look forward to it because I'm sure it'll be warmer when we see one another.
Thank you, John.
Okay, take care.